You are listening to a sermon by Henry Neufeld, recorded on Sunday, May 18, 2014, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Thank you, Andre. Andre and I didn't discuss the details of what I was going to say, but his interesting comments about memory will take away one paragraph of my sermon. Thank you. One of the problems with memory is the recall button. Sometimes it's hard to find. A number of years ago, an RCMP officer phoned me from Manitoba and asked me if I recalled having a certain staff member, and I did. And he said, "Do you remember him telling you about a problem he had with his neighbor, and the neighbor happened to be an RCMP officer?" I said, "No, I don't." We talked for a while, and he said, "Well, I'll give you my name and number. If anything comes to mind, give me a call." About 3 days later, clear out of the blue, the recall was there. The discussion, the incidents, the names, everything. So I phoned him back and he said, "Well, thank you, that's great to hear because that confirms what the fellow told me." So I was happy. I was surprised that I found the recall button or that it found me because I had totally forgotten about it. Miroslav Volf, V-O-L-F, is a theology professor at Yale Divinity School. He grew up in communist Yugoslavia under Marshal Tito. His father was a Pentecostal clergyman, and Miroslav was a theology student. In the early 1980s, while in theology studies, he was given permission to study in California, and he studied at Fuller Theological Seminary, and while there, he married an American lady. They returned to Yugoslavia. He continued his theology studies, and in 1980, he was conscripted into the military. While in the military, he was subjected to regular interrogation for several reasons. His father was a clergyman. He was a Christian. He had lived in the USA. He had married an American lady, and therefore they were both CIA spies. His fellow soldiers were enlisted to spy on him and to give him American magazines and try and engage him in political discussions. He was given an office job and was quite happy about that until he realized that the office was bugged. All of his conversations were recorded. And he was subjected to intense and terrifying interrogation. He was never tortured physically, but he found this very threatening. If you want to see a current movie about this kind of experience, go see The Railway Man, showing at the International Cinema downtown. It's a movie about Colin Firth, who was a soldier in the Second World War, British soldier in Singapore, captured by the Japanese, taken to Thailand to work on a railway. And he was severely physically tortured. Years later, he goes back to Thailand to find his abuser and confront him. It's a powerful story, what we're seeing. In rate, for decades after his discharge, Wolf found he was unable to banish from his mind the memories of the interrogations he suffered. And eventually he wrote a book, The End of Memory, Remembering Rightly in a Violent World. And most of what I have to say is based on what I read in this book. His book was born out of a spiritual quest to discover what, if any, closure or ending he might achieve in this life and in the next. Is there a way to forget, especially unpleasant experiences, and to move on? And if so, doesn't the forgetting let the abuser off the hook? But remembering means that the interrogator still has an influence over him. So out of this experience, Wolf shapes the following questions. How should we remember unpleasant experiences? How should we remember? How long should we remember? And is there a Christian way of remembering? And he struggles with a common dilemma. As a Christian, rather than hating his enemy or ignoring him, how does a wrong person forgive and love that enemy? And is that even possible? And he, in the book, he deals with the whole issue of often if we have enemies, we ignore them. That's not an option for Christians. We're required to love them. So, again, he's worried about letting the abuser off the hook. But the recalling and remembering brings back pain and all the emotions that go with it. And that means the interrogator continues to wrong him, even years later. Now, I expect we all have painful memories of things that happened to us. They're stored, they're encoded. Sometimes we retrieve them, and sometimes we rework them, and sometimes we thrive on them. There are the relationships with our parents and siblings, the hurt or the wrong caused by a teacher, or a classmate, or a colleague, a boss, a lover, a spouse, a pastor, or a fellow church member. Now, these incidents might not have reached the level of severe interrogation experienced by Wolf, but nonetheless, they were serious enough that they affected us and we remember them. Now, memory is fundamental to our well-being. Most of what we say and write is based on memories. And if we consider the person who suffers from dementia and the tragic loss of memory and the resulting sense of alienation and lostness, we realize how important memory is. For the person with dementia, the recall of past events is gone. Memories and recognition of friends and family fade. It's very tragic. So we're talking about the memory of unpleasant events in our past. Experiences where someone hurt us or where we feel deeply offended. Should we remember? How do we remember? And should wrongs be remembered forever? Being truthful about what we remember is important. Our memories are prone to distortion. There's often an unintentional blurring of the facts. Or we simply repress them, sending them out of our mind as quickly as possible. We also want to embellish our memories to make the other person look worse than they actually are, and to make ourselves look better. And Bull says he wanted to make his interrogator look much worse than he was. Furthermore, we don't always remember accurately. Think of two people who see the same event, a car accident. Their memories will have differing details. Ask your siblings about an event from your childhood, and you'll hear different versions of the same story. We all tell our stories from a particular perspective. And that's why we have four Gospels. We need all those perspectives. And if you keep a diary or a journal and go back and read it, you'll be surprised at some of the events described because you've forgotten them. Or try a brief experiment. When you drive home today, ask your fellow passengers if they recall something that was said about such and such. And you'll be surprised, as Tina and I often are, at what we heard, or what the other person heard, or what we misheard. So what do we do with our negative memories? Because somehow we need to have the useless negative historical memories stop controlling how we deal with life today. Because too often we hold on to old grudges and negative memories. We feed them. We thrive on them. We nurture them. And we retell them. And sometimes we enjoy retelling them. And when we spend too much time going back into old horror stories, there is not much room for growth and forgiveness. Vengeance and resentment, no matter how justified, make forgiveness difficult. And this is partly because our thoughts often go in negative directions. And if we can learn to forgive someone, that means that we can make room for the future and make peace with our past. And Wolf suggests that it's better to move through life with a sense of peace about what happened, and then let it fade from our memories. Some therapists suggest rewriting our past to help in our healing process. And Tina has an interesting strategy. She says, write the person a letter, but don't send it. She's got a whole file of letters to me. Wolf suggests that we integrate the wrongdoing into our life story. We might have gained important insights from the violations we experienced. Feedback is important. Maybe we learned something about humanity or about human nature, or we got closer to God. And some Holocaust survivors have been able to do this. Wolf points out that as Christians, we have a new identity. And with the new identity, we no longer see ourselves as a wronged person. I no longer see myself as the one who was betrayed. But I'd sure like to keep feeding my resentment. Christians are defined not by what happened, but by the fact that God loves us. We are defined by how God relates to us. We are not held captive by the past. He says there might be a time when we allow the memories to slip from our minds because they have served their purpose. We remember wrongs suffered, but we're not defined by those events. We are defined by our relationships with God and with others. The memories might still cause pain, but they don't define us. We are more than that experience. We don't need to cling to those memories. God's presence and love did not erase the memory for Wolf, but he was able to relegate it to the periphery of his life. Well, the impact of wrongdoing affects us in the sense that it changes our view of the world. The world is not really a nice, safe place. Bad things should not happen to good people, but they do. Wrongs done to us can entrap us, can make us bitter, resentful, hostile, and drag our spirits down. Past wrongs can rob us of our future. And if we think of rape victims, or think of those hundreds of Nigerian girls who have just been kidnapped, it may take a long time for people like that to be able to look to the future with any sense of hope. And sometimes our self-righteous rage at having been hurt produces an appetite for revenge. And as victims, we victimize. And that makes us feel good, even if only for a little while. And think of the Israeli-Palestinian situation about victimization. The Old Testament injunctions to remember are powerful. Remember that you were a slave in Egypt. For the Jews, it's important to remember their redemption from their suffering and mistreatment. This remembering was to change their life. If a fellow Hebrew, a man or a woman, sells himself to you and serves you 6 years, in the seventh year, you must let him go free. Do not send him away empty-handed. Supply him liberally from your flock, your treasure, or your wine cellar. Give him as the Lord your God has blessed you. And remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. Remembering should change how they live and how they treat others. So remembering is not only part of Jewish life, it's a key part of Christianity. Many churches have communion tables with the inscription, "Do this in remembrance of me." Our testimonies, our confession, all hinge on memory. But memory is more than a recitation of facts. Reciting facts is merely history. And when we celebrate communion, we narrate the death and resurrection of Christ as events in which we are involved. We have been resurrected to a new life. We sustain and continue to tell our sacred memories. And Wolf says that at the communion table, he brings his interrogator to that table in his mind. Now, it's interesting that not all memories are of the past. Some are of the future. Remember that next week we have our church retreat. And so our communion services are about the past and about the future, about the great feast in eternity. And when we remember our Anabaptist history, it helps shape our identity and our sense of community, as we have heard in the last couple of weeks. It should help shape our future. Memories of wrongs suffered should be pushed to the periphery of our life stories, not to the defining center of our lives. And the defining center is an interesting concept. This week we were at a funeral of a childhood friend of mine who's had MS for 40 years. One of the lines in the obituary said, "She was marked but not defined by her MS." I thought it was a powerful and a beautiful line. Our memories cannot be erased. They simply are there. And we cannot demand that people forget and move on with life. Over time, there is a certain fading of memories. Tina recalls incidents of our life of which I have no memory. And I'm reassured by what Isaiah says, "For I am about to create a new heaven and a new earth. The former things shall not be remembered or come to mind." So, happiness requires immersion in the present. And people who are unhappy often tend to dwell on the past, on memories. They can't forget, or they don't want to forget, at least for a little while. So if we put our emphasis on making someone happy, we have to forget, at least for a little while, any unpleasantness in our relationship. If we dwell on our past, it will be more difficult to attend to the needs of others. Memories carry with them what is known as the pain of the irreversible. We cannot change the past. But when I think of situations, especially difficult or unpleasant ones, I cause myself emotional pain by thinking, I should have done this, or I should have done this, or I should have said that, or more likely, I shouldn't have said anything. Yet, my happiness requires not that I forget what happened or beat myself up about it, but in learning from that experience and focusing on the present. Paul in Philippians does something quite remarkable. He says he's forgetting what lies behind and stretching for the goal. He's future-oriented. But then he goes on and lists the things. He said, I was imprisoned, flogged, beaten, shipwrecked, hungry, and so on. He itemizes all these things that he suffered as a Christian, but he doesn't dwell on them. The South African or the Canadian Aboriginal Truth and Reconciliation Commissions, the whole process was there to allow people to remember, to recall, and to confront their abusers. So we might ask, what benefit do these actions have? Well, sometimes all we can offer victims is a voice, and we can listen to them. Well, sometimes for therapeutic reasons, it's important to examine the past. We can't simply toss our memories into the trash bin of our minds and forget about them. The past must be redeemed, for redemption of the past is part of the Christian vision of salvation. So, may our God, as we remember, heal our memories.